The following program contains scenes and language of a frank and explicit nature. Viewer discretion is advised.
You know what happens to vampires who don't get to feed?
I always wondered that, actually.
Giles, plates.
Living skeletons, mate.
Like famine pictures from those dusty countries. Well, they're not half as funny.
Welcome back for the second part of our Halloween roundtable discussion. Hopefully...
The Halloween-y part.
Hopefully you suffered through our discussion of Twilight. I certainly know that we suffered through it.
And are stronger for it now.
I'd like to think.
Larry and I hugged.
When we took a break, they did mend a few fences, which was a good thing. True. So I think we're going to be able to make it through this next segment with a fair degree of civility. It's unlikely. We are going to go ahead and do our top five vampires.
Boom.
Not our top five favorite vampire movies, because I think those lists would be drastically similar. I'm hoping that our individual vampires might give us a little bit of variety. I'm really looking forward to this, and I think that maybe some of my choices are a little bit less obvious than usually I might have brought to the table. So
I feel that same way.
I also feel that way.
Oh, boy.
We'll see.
We all pick the same movies.
Film Jitsu listeners, this is going to be an exercise in obscurity.
Well, why don't we start off with you, Larry, then, and we'll kind of go around the table here and start off with our number five.
All right, number five. Number five for me is Martin in George Romero's
Excellent.
Martin.
Excellent.
Who is a vampire who may possibly not be a vampire.
Right.
He's a disturbed young man who believes he's a vampire. Living in Pittsburgh, he goes to live with his elderly cousin who is from the old country, Romania, and his cousin definitely thinks he's a vampire and tries to keep him locked up with garlic and everything. But, you know, Martin, this is Romero's sort of modern age take on vampires. There's a lot of ambiguity here. It's not really clear if
razor blade.
Oh, Martin, he doesn't, you know, have fangs, but he uses a razor blade and a syringe, and it's just a really creepy, unsettling movie. And even if Martin isn't a vampire, he's that sort of creepy weirdo on the train who's like always staring at you, and it's disconcerting when you're on the train, but then, you know, at midnight that night when you're back at home, you like think about it again, and then you're frightened for the rest of the evening. And I think he's just he's one of the, you know, one of my favorite vampires.
Absolutely.
In movies, just because he's so, you know, kind of offbeat and against the typical vampire mold.
Great pick. Yeah.
And I think that's such a criminally underappreciated film, because most people associate Romero obviously with zombies.
Yep.
And they don't know that he's done a really solid vampire film, and not even just a vampire film, but one that's kind of full of ambiguity and questions. And, you know, I really, really dug his effort.
It's incredibly
there.
Unsettling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's another movie. Very subversive film, which he is just amazing at doing. I mean, that's what he does.
Or he used to be.
Right. Well, yeah,
I was
okay.
You said it. And I was like, all right, let's talk a little bit about how he's gone downhill. And how John Carpenter has gone downhill, how John Landis has gone downhill, how all of these
Wes Craven has gone downhill.
Wonderful filmmakers have really just completely lost all the gas.
That sounds like next year's Halloween roundtable.
Joe Dante.
What the hell happened? That'll be our next year's discussion.
That's a great idea.
Well, my list, I guess first and foremost, this is kind of my Max Schreck, Bela Lugosi, Christopher Lee tribute list. For me, I felt like I just didn't want to split hairs among the classics personally, because I just consider those guys all so great. I didn't feel like I could rank them for myself. I didn't feel like I could say, like, the Max Schreck Nosferatu or Bela Lugosi's piercing eyes. Like, how do I say that one is number one and one is number two? I couldn't. So I just think, for me, all those guys are kind of on their own sort of level of awesomeness.
Okay.
My number five is actually the little girl Ellie from Let the Right One In.
Oh, so not the... Wait, the original or
the original?
Yeah,
yes,
she's
very
outstanding.
Important. Yeah. The English language remake. I just really, really dug this portrayal of the vampire, because, and I think this is going to kind of pop up for me a couple of times. I loved the duality of, you have this little lonely, vulnerable girl who is also a savage, vicious monster, and you have this little boy getting to know her as the little lonely girl that lives nearby, but she's got this horribly dark side. And it's not necessarily evil in the way that he interprets who she is, but I just really had an appreciation for that character and kind of the two sides of that coin. How at one moment I could feel totally sympathetic for this little girl, and her portrayal of kind of a sad little girl I thought was incredible. I totally bought into it. I
can't remember the child actor's name offhand. Yeah, like some sort of like alliteration to her name, and I can't remember what it is. Aris.
If I were better at having a podcast, I would have written it down.
She was outstanding. Outstanding.
But it's that take of vampire not as evil, but as animalistic.
Sure.
So it takes some of that morality out of it, but it's still just as shocking and as violent when she does kill. Mm-hmm. So it's a cool mix on that.
Such a great movie. Yeah. Right. Such a great movie.
Yep. I haven't seen Let Me In.
That's right.
It seemed like a completely unnecessary English language remake.
Yeah.
It did get fairly positive reviews, even when compared to the other one. So, I mean, maybe I could watch it and just take it as its own separate thing and not really compare it. But I don't know. I think if I was going to spend the hour and a half, I'd rather just watch Let the Right One In again.
The actress's name is Lena Lee Anderson.
Okay. I knew there was some sort of alliteration there. But
you knew that off the top of your head, not because smartphones exist.
Obviously not.
All right, well, I'll jump off of Mike's list here. Normally, my number five is my jokey pick, but I had so many vampires trying to figure out who was going to wind up on the list that I didn't do that. Hmm. So this is my Count Dracula tribute list of that. Because I have to get it in there. Normally, you know, my number five is my joke pick. So
Count Dracula.
But my number five, I'm going with
Blackula.
Damn. Oh, Blackula.
Is it too late for me to nominate Count Chocula?
No. Yes. He's not in a movie. Perhaps, he doesn't count.
Perhaps not a film vampire, but one of the best nutrition-based vampires of all time.
Yeah, nutrition-based. Yeah,
exactly. I'm going with a movie that would also make my list if we did top five movie posters. I'm going with Chris Sarandon's Jerry Dandridge from Fright Night.
Nice. Yes.
1985 Perfect Fright choice. Night. None of this Colin Farrell bullshit.
No.
But...
In Thrizzle Dizzle, no less.
Yeah, exactly. I love how he captures – there's just a subtleness to some of the creepy. It's not overdone, but you know something's off about him. I just think it's a really great performance that he brings to the screen. And like I said, the movie poster is fucking phenomenal.
It really is great. It's great.
Yeah. Great.
If I were to get super drunk and get a giant back tattoo, I would hope it would be the cover of Fright Night. Yep. So
either good. That or the movie poster for House. Either one. Right. Yeah, in that same vein.
That's true. That's good, too. I actually own the vinyl soundtrack.
Nice.
Wow.
And for Fright Night. And one of the primary reasons that I own it is because of that.
I remember '85 when I probably saw this '86 maybe or sometime around that.
43.
Well, I was a kid and video store, before the big chains like Blockbuster, the first video store opened up in my neighborhood, and we could go to the video store and you'd see all these great covers. And a lot of my early horror movies I saw were because of these just great covers.
They were
amazing.
You'd see so many horrible movies.
That's how I saw Fright Night. That's how I saw House was because of those.
Fright Night 2, which not a lot of people have seen, which I like. I like the movie a lot. But Fright Night 2 actually had this incredibly spare white poster
with just the smiling
lips with fangs on it. And that was it. And I had it hanging up in my bedroom when I was a teenager.
Nice. Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that you brought that up. I mean, it definitely was. And that's sort of a nice segue into my list. I had two options here, and I talked a little bit with Larry before the podcast about this, with how I could take this list, five top bloodsuckers. one side was really think about those ones that were in movies that were incredibly memorable and just really, like, all three of your picks would have been on that list. They would have been on my list, no question. But then there was another angle I could have taken. Vampires, to me, are inherently sexy, seductive, alluring, and every single one on my list is a woman.
Nice. I was hoping somebody would
because
go this way.
I if I'm going to get my neck bitten into, it's going to be by some hotness. And so, in order from 5 to 1, the hotness. Of course, I'm going to start with number 5 and then we'll go around the table. But I wanted to set why all of mine were the way they were right up front. Number 5, Salma Hayek in From Dusk Till Dawn.
And now, for your viewing pleasure, the mistress of the macabre. The epitome of evil. The most sinister woman to ever dance on the face of this earth.
Fight this!
Lonely dog! Bow your head. Kneel and worship at the feet of Santanico Pandemonium.
I have in all caps written in my notes, fuck yeah. A stripper that dances with a snake and then chews on bikers.
Yeah, I considered her for exactly the same. I did kind of go more with that list number one, but absolutely, she was kicking around on this list.
And you know, not to say that any of these women couldn't have just been on that list by themselves. Sure. They could have, certainly.
Because I
would have picked
her.
Selma Hayek necessarily on a list that where Martin was on, mm-hmm. or where Jerry Dandridge, or I just like the girl from Let the Right One, who was on my list, who I had typed on it, and then I was like, no, I'm going to go this other route because I thought you guys might go the way you went, and I wanted to give a different perspective. So Selma Hayek, I mean.
Satanico Pandemonium.
I think that our listeners.
The movie. I'm not a big fan of the movie, but
I think our listeners are going to start suspecting that we're shills for the studio because this movie and this character seems to be coming up every week, no matter what our topic.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
She was in our
Satanico
top
Pandemonium, specifically
top five cleavage.
Right. Top five cleavage.
Oh, God, right? Yeah. Oh my. Yeah. How could she not make that list? Was Monica Bellucci from Dracula on there too?
No, we would have invited you to do your own list, but we thought a top 65 list. A little too much. So, as our official ambassador to all things boob,
it's nice to have.
I want to know how many exclamation points Jason has after "fuck yeah" in his notes.
I just have a period. Weirdly,
It's more. That is way more. It's more definitive.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
You really
there
right.
It is.
Fuck yeah. All right.
Well, so all right. Four. Number four. This pick made it onto Mike's memorial list, but for me, my number four vampire, I couldn't leave him off this list, is Christopher Lee. As Dracula in the Hammer Studio.
He's so good.
He's just he's so awesome. Good. And
that's why I couldn't rank the guy. He was like, he's on a level just to himself.
He's on another level, but I love the Hammer. I love the Hammer movies. Yeah. I just really like him. And Christopher Lee as Dracula, he's pretty much all you want in a Dracula. And he's got all of that stuff in equal parts. He's very suave and handsome, but he's never trying to, you know, Dracula in the Hammer films is never trying to hide how evil he is. He is straight up 100% evil all the time. And he's also really creepy and menacing. And, you know, you look at him and it's not like in other interpretations of Dracula where people are like, oh, that guy's kind of weird, but, oh, he's the Count, whatever. Like, Christopher Lee looks evil and, like, he will probably eat you. And you know, I watch Christopher Lee in these movies, and I'm like, how did anyone like fall for him as like as like someone who wouldn't eat you? But he's great. My personal favorite is Dracula AD 1972, where the Count is resurrected in the modern age, and some wayward hippies bring him back, and then he eats all of them. And
thank goodness. Right. If anybody was gonna fuck everything up, it'd be the hippies. But man, if you
I was
just
not
turn
surprised.
Around and
you always wonder about whether the peyote carries through. You know what I mean? Like
contact high.
Right. It's like, I'm feeling a little weird after that particular trip.
That's
going to
be a roundtable discussion for next year. If you eat a hippie, do you get a contact high?
So that's my number four.
Nice.
My number four is not too far off from Christopher Lee. I think he's very much inspired by. I'm going with Gary Oldman's ridiculously hammy Count Dracula in Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. I mean, like, it's just
so good.
It's so hammy. It's so sinister. That fucking hair.
Oh, I love the hair. The and bun. The bun.
And let's not forget, were it not for that, we wouldn't have got Mr. Burns as that character in The Simpsons Treehouse of Horror.
I'm just going to jump ahead here and say that one of my honorable mentions was Mr. Burns as the Gary Oldman Dracula in The Treehouse of Horror.
Right. Yep.
And I know it's TV, but
I couldn't go with Eric Northman because it was TV.
That's what the tribute list is for,
Those honorable mentions.
I think that movie is so... I can't come up with anything other than hammy. You know, Gary Oldman is just kind of so...
Theatrical. It's
very... It's like a play.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Yep. See, this is why we invite smarter guys to the table.
But talk about owning a room.
I know, yeah.
He's so good in that movie. So good.
I think
in all the forms.
Not
just that big-ass bun form, but like
but when he's,
like all like gothy like magician looking dude
and
trolling the streets of 1800s.
I loved him next to Keanu Reeves' Jonathan Harker because Gary Oldman, when he walked into the room as Dracula, like John said, he owned the room. He was so in control. And I feel like Keanu Reeves as an actor and in this character, like I feel like I feel like he couldn't control his fly if he had to take a piss in the woods. Like, that's just how I feel about the guy. And so it was just that perfect dynamic of, like, good news, Dracula fucking owns your ass, and bad news, you're Keanu Reeves, so you don't stand a goddamn chance. I just loved it.
Wow. Yeah, it's a great, great pick. We'll be talking about that again.
He has like three topless wives.
Yeah,
right. Nice. One of which is Monica Bellucci.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I just want to say that again, Monica fucking Bellucci. All right, sorry.
A chilling insight into the inner workings of Jason Santos' mind. A 24-hour loop of Monica Bellucci outfits.
Monica, if you're listening, drop us a line. The message line's open.
Yeah, please. Exactly. So my number
address
four
is five.
My number four, I'm going with this not only because I think it's a fun take on vampires and I think it's a great performance, but it's one of the only really solid performances I've ever seen out of this guy. Now, that doesn't mean he hasn't done other things that I think are good, but this is tops for his career, for me personally anyway. Kiefer Sutherland's David in The Lost Boys.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah.
When has Sutherland ever done that on film?
No. I was recently listening to, I'm pretty sure it was the Film Spotting podcast, and they were talking about how Kiefer Sutherland has never really had that one big star-making performance, obviously apart from 24. Mm-hmm. But when you think about the stuff he's been in, I mean, I think the closest you could say is maybe Flatliners?
Yeah, that would be.
Maybe,
yeah.
But you know, he's had some memorable roles.
Kind of in the background.
Yes.
Because it was part of an ensemble cast.
He's had some, you know, I think obviously he's the most out front in The Lost Boys.
Yeah.
He's
but
great.
Even, you know, something like Stand By Me where he just
he's
plays
just in
this
the
greaser bully, but you know, he's important.
In the
he's always
Dark City.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yep.
So that came up, but I think you're
you've
right.
got that iconic image of his face coming out of the dark with the eyes are all yellowed
and
and he just like he just kind of pokes his head out and it's so menacing and it
probably would have made my list.
But then also on the other end of that you have the scene of him tormenting with the food.
Chinese, good choice.
Over here, bud.
Yes, first. You don't like rice? Tell me, Michael, how could a billion Chinese people be wrong? Come on. How are those maggots? Maggots, Michael. You're eating maggots. How do they taste?
Leave him alone.
There is some solid acting done there
sure.
in that film, and it's just a great take on the vampire. And I mean, that movie is just a fun sort of send up of the vampire movie. Almost is really what it is.
Awesome. Right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
The last line of the movie.
Yeah.
The last line of the movie.
Oh yeah.
I've always liked living here if it wasn't for all the goddamn vampires.
Oh, yeah.
Goddamn vampires. Yeah. That's right.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. But, that is a great line.
Yeah.
It is. Okay. So number four on my now very predictable list. Lauren Hutton in Once Bitten.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. I can't believe Once Bitten ended up on the top five.
The button-biting bitch.
Oh, yeah.
She wore some outlandishly fantastic costumes, as I recall, with legs up to her ears.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Just unbelievable. I love that little space in her teeth. I don't know. Virginal Jim Carrey was like Prey, which I thought was great. It was before he was really overly elastic and overly, you know.
Yep.
And the movie's a guilty pleasure.
Oh, totally.
I still really like it a lot. I still watch it. I probably watch it about once a year or so. I really do like this movie.
Otherwise, it would be twice bitten.
It's a good early entry into that horror comedy that we've started seeing more and more now.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah. And the older woman seducing the younger man was sort of like a real big thing for me back when I was, you know, a little guy. So I was like, this is fantastic. This would be so great. So I was totally on board with this movie.
All right. So number three. My number three is Willem Dafoe as Max Schreck in Shadow of the Vampire.
Yep.
A vampire masquerading as an actor playing a vampire in F.W. Murnau's Nosferatu. Right.
Victor Victoria.
It's just totally awesome. And
is that? That's not Bill Condon, is it? That directed that one? Shadow of the Empire. I'm not sure who directed it.
If I had done my research a little more, I would have that. But Willem Dafoe, it's just a totally awesome performance, and he just gets to go nuts with it. He gets to be
he's out of control.
He's just out of control.
Which is
creepy.
A lot for that guy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Giving Willem Dafoe free rein to be weird and eccentric, but like barely keeping it in check so that he can keep this job as an actor in Nosferatu. It's just great. I think it's one of Willem Dafoe's best performances.
Which says a lot.
Yeah.
It does.
But definitely one of my favorite vampires.
Excellent.
In films.
Nice. Nicely
great
done.
Great choice.
Well, we're going to hustle right along here now because my number three also is Willem Dafoe.
And oh!
Up top.
There we go.
Second high five in film.
Yeah, no, I mean, I couldn't agree with Larry more. I absolutely love the way he just throws himself into the silliness of what he's trying to do. I mean,
how dare you? How dare you destroy my photographer? You idiot!
Did I kill some of your people, Murno? I can't remember.
We have an arrangement.
Don't pretend you mourn, Herr Doctor. I know you.
Why him, you monster? Why not the script girl?
The script girl. I'll eat her later.
He plays that role for laughs in a movie that is like, I couldn't quite call it a comedy. And actually, I don't know if you remember this, John. You and I saw that movie together in Vermont. We went to the theater. I thought it was something very, very different than what the movie turned out to be. I thought I was going in seeing a dark, scary vampire movie. No. It was kind of marketed that way. And what I got was completely different. And it was such a refreshing surprise. I was like, I couldn't believe what I was given. And I just enjoyed it so much for what it is and because of how delightfully surprised I was by
it. The way Dafoe plays it, he's always acting like he can't believe he's getting away with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he's always doing these crazy things. He is a vampire. He's running amok on this movie set, and he's always thinking like, no one's stopping me. Someone should be saying something. I'm waiting for someone to stop me. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
And they're hey, Max.
There's an exuberance to his evil.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
It's just great to see that. Wait, I can?
It reminds me actually in a lot of ways of the Grinch.
Yes.
He's kind of like the Grinch.
That's excellent.
That's good.
Yep.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, we'll just keep the train rolling because my number three... But I did it a little differently. I made it a double pick because Willem Dafoe is not able to do that if Max Schreck doesn't do Nosferatu the way he did.
Right.
So you have to tip the hat to
the other way.
You have to tip the hat to Max Schreck if you're going to be putting Willem Dafoe on there. But for all the reasons you've stated, it had to make the list. It's such a great, great, great performance.
Wow, guys.
Wow. Well, we know that Jason's third pick is not going to be the same.
Nope. Nope. Mine is
Willem Dafoe has like a really good,
really good tract
of land.
Unless he looks really
of land.
Looks great,
smart
in a sundress. mine is probably one of my favorite vampires of all, and she would have made my list regardless of what we were talking about. You know, whether or not I thinned it to just the ones that I want to bang or. It would be Catherine Deneuve in the Hunger.
Oh.
Miriam Blaylock. The name itself, Miriam Blaylock. Just like, wow, legendary. Like, so good.
Not to be confused with NBA superstar Mookie Blaylock.
Why not? No. that hair, she had amazing, like, hair. She was just, like, she had this great accent. And if you saw The Hunger, if you saw this love scene with Susan Sarandon, I can't imagine how you... Don't have her on your list. she's so hot that she was in the shower with David Bowie, and she was more beautiful, which is hard to do.
Because David Bowie has those extraterrestrial sex powers.
He just absolutely is gorgeous. You know, even as like a, you know, I'm looking at him like, wow, she's gorgeous. Like, I mean, like, wow. And the story of Miriam Blaylock and the whole set of The Hunger, the whole setup of it was very gothic and very rich imagery. It's Tony Scott, so of course everything's shrouded in cigarette smoke and everything else. But it really does have a great story. It's a little bit different treatment of vampire mythology. She dates back all the way to the Egyptians and everything else. I mean, it's just really rich. And I thought, oh yeah, she definitely made that list.
It's a stunning pick. It's
very good. Thank you, sir.
All right, so my number two, we've already covered this one, but it is Ellie, the little vampire girl,
yep.
and Let the Right One In.
Great pick.
You know, as we were saying before, she's equal parts. She's very vulnerable, but she's also sort of like the apex predator in this like apartment complex. Like, you know, when I watch Let the Right One In, I want to like hug her and, you know, give her a Hello Kitty backpack or something and like just tell her everything's going to be okay.
And then she'll chew your neck
out. You've had
out.
Such a hard life, but then, you know, you watch her like eat a bunch of people and you're like, ooh, whoa.
But isn't that great? Because vampires is supposed to be the thing that attracts you most, not... I'm not saying sexually.
Right.
I'm just saying that draw you to them right. so that they right. can prey on you easily. Right. It's one of yeah. the strengths of Twilight
yeah.
is the fact that Edward is so attractive to yeah. Bella. So it's the same thing. You've got this little girl, this easy, you know, this thing that never you would think, you know, could be vicious or anything. Yeah. And you're immediately drawn to and whoosh,
and
alpha
yeah.
predator.
It's
and if anything, like a lot of times, and I think a couple times in the movie that she uses this as her kind of method of hunting, is that in a lot of ways you see her somebody, they approach her to almost protect her. Like, who is this little girl that's
yeah,
hanging out outside
yeah.
in the cold?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know,
no.
people approach her as like,
it's absolutely
as somebody
yeah.
who's weak.
Yeah.
That's definitely
yeah.
what it
it's
is. That's
great,
what I mean by that attractiveness
yeah,
factor.
Yeah,
it's that.
Really,
it's that sense of, I've got to protect her. I've got to take care of her.
But,
she's alone, whatever else.
And then what's interesting about her as a character is she uses that vulnerability to like to be a predator, but she also recognizes that vulnerability in the little boy Oscar, and at that moment she takes the protective role of him.
Yeah.
And so she, you know, she's got that sort of duality there where she plays vulnerable, but she's the predator, but she's also the protector
yeah.
too.
But it's a great take on that attraction, because we've been doing vampire sexual attraction
right.
for hundreds of years
right,
now.
Right, right.
So it's how do we get that attractiveness without it being
brilliant,
you know, rooted in sexuality.
I think that's
you know?
So
it's
great.
A
and that's
great
one of
twist.
The fundamental things that makes
yeah.
that movie work so well.
Yeah.
Well, my number two made it a little bit further on down my list than maybe it did for my co-host here, but I am also going with Chris Sarandon in Fright Night. First of all, his name is Jerry.
Jerry Dandridge.
Jerry Dandridge.
How
yeah.
great is a vampire named Jerry?
Yeah. He sounds like he's the middle manager at the bank.
He should be wearing like wearing a NASCAR hat and stocking groceries or something.
But Jerry Dandridge also is very much a porn name. I'm
yes,
sorry.
That's true.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
And,
yeah, that's
and
what it is.
I love that not only is he feeding on this suburban community and he's very threatening and he also wants to bang Brewster's mom. Like, there's something
oh,
so
yeah.
like not
yeah.
only like, look, kid, I'm a vampire. I'm going to kill all your friends. I'm going to kill you. And by the way, I'm asleep with your mom.
Yeah.
That's just like,
I'm not going to taste that.
How much more sinister can you get than I'm going to kill you and bang your mom?
That doesn't. Like, that's
nope.
really like the
yep.
two tops of being.
And like you said,
yeah.
he's so like, he's so icy and cool and evil. He's so confident
yeah.
in his control on the situation. I really
know he's not on my list. I know
yep.
he's not, and he's on your list. But nobody's mentioned the wonderful music by Brad Fidel.
Yeah.
In Fright Night, specifically
yeah.
the Fright Night theme.
For our listeners at home, it's worth noting that Jason right now is wearing a Fright Night t-shirt.
Oh,
yes.
I forgot.
Yes.
And you know what? It actually, I wouldn't have picked Jerry Dandridge. I would have picked
Evil Ed.
Ed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about it.
Oh, you're so cool, Brewster! Like, oh, man, he's such a little shit. I love
yep.
him. Yeah. Fright Night's a great movie.
Oh,
you
so
guys
good.
Are awesome.
All right. Well, my number two, I'm going to keep going with a pick that Larry had, but I picked him in a different film. Although I agree, they're all great. Christopher Lee as Dracula, but I went with The Horror of Dracula. And the reason why that one stands out to me is because when you think of Christopher Lee as Dracula, there's that iconic image of him hissing. That sort of...
Oh, that...
Yeah. And that's
yeah,
in The
right.
Horror of Dracula, when one of the female vampires is trying to feed on Jonathan Harker, and he comes in and he is fucking rip shit. Like, you are not... You're getting in the ways of my
as
plans.
Good as Oldman?
It's tough. That's a tough call. But there's just, you're in the way of my plans here.
Right.
And bitch, I'll cut you. And he just comes in and there's just that close up on him of him. Oh, that is iconic vampire imagery right there. The local Channel 38 in Boston used to do creature double features on Saturdays. And all these Hammer films were in that run. And they were... it was a combination of Hammer vampire movies and Godzilla movies, and that's what I grew up on. It was great.
That's right.
Shit.
Creature double feature.
Yeah. Yep. God, it's such a great scene.
Well, back to my list. Back to the boobs. Matilda May and Life Force.
I hope our listeners have seen Life Force.
I really hope that everyone in the world that listens to this podcast now goes out and immediately checks out Tobe Hooper's Life Force from, I guess it was like, no, in 1984 or so. It was after he, quote unquote, directed Poltergeist and picked up some pointers from Steven Spielberg on how to direct. He made a fantastic, fantastic end of the world apocalypse thriller with space vampires and a naked Matilda May who was just
like an always naked.
Always naked, like through, oh man. I wrote here, also Matilda is fully on naked through much of this movie's running time, and she is positively a vision of flesh as alabaster perfection.
It sounds like you just wrote a passage of Twilight.
I did. Oh, and one quick thing about Twilight is being directed by Bill Condon. Okay, who actually directed Gods and Monsters, I thought directed Shadow of the Vampire, but he didn't. I get those movies confused fairly often.
Right.
But Gods and Monsters, Bill Condon, Shadow of the Vampire, E. Elias Merhege, or Merhege.
Merrigan?
Merhege.
Yeah. Merhege. I got a check coming my way.
I can't even read this guy's name. Merhige, but that's our Shadow of the Vampire.
Margriti.
Merete. Merganze.
What was Brad Pitt's?
Dominique de Coco.
What was Brad Pitt's fake Italian name? Gorlami.
Gorlami.
Yeah, Gorlami. From Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah. We just used that whole scene in a movie.
It was brilliant.
Oh, God.
All right, well, Santo.
One.
You stole my thunder.
Oh, Matilda May!
My number one, when I was asked to come up with top five vampires, the first vampire I thought of immediately was Matilda May in Life Force. And not simply because she's naked for the whole movie.
That's great.
Stop lying.
No.
I refuse to believe anything.
Okay. But listen to my reasoning.
I love the fact you picked this.
When you consider vampires, all right, if we are quantifying our memorable vampires in terms of how much havoc they wreak, Matilda May as the space girl in Life Force pretty much destroys the planet.
Well, she destroys London anyway.
She destroys London, and I can only assume that her plague of space vampirism will extend to all of the other continents. She comes from space, and in a matter of days, she destroys London completely.
And while she's a non-traditional vampire in that she sucks energy instead of blood, she does turn into a bat at one point. Bats.
Yeah, they were like space bats.
Space bats. I did say that. Space bats.
But...
weird ass spates bats is actually
Yeah. It's sort of like, you know, the peyote. Like the peyote. God, space bats.
We are now in bat. Space bats.
Swatting at elves.
But you know, Christopher Lee as Dracula, he eats a good two dozen people,
maybe.
And all the no one has anything on Matilda May, who wipes out London.
Yeah. Oh, in terms of sheer efficiency.
In terms of sheer efficiency.
Well, she only does very little of the damage. She just spreads the plague.
Doesn't matter. She's like the Henry Ford of vampirism. Just fucking
she puts
cranking
on the
them out.
And I don't think...
Yeah. Just getting it done.
She does have... Ugh. Yeah, she does have some dialogue. I was going to say, I don't think she really has any
She's
dialogue.
She's the outbreak
she
monkey.
Does. She is the outbreak monkey.
Yeah.
See?
Oh, God. Yes. I would give into that. Outbreak I would ever. Give up this... to that outbreak monkey any day of the week.
Wow. we're learning a lot about Jason. Or, I mean, listeners at home, are we... We
you
are
all
already
know.
But that's my number one. And I have to agree with Jason.
More high fives.
More high fives. Listeners, you got to go watch Life Force. Who did the score? Mancini. Henry Mancini.
Oh, my God. Henry Mancini writes one of the greatest scores in movie history.
It's really awesome. You should, like, gather an army and march to that score.
Well, I think that they used to play it during, like, football commercials and stuff like that. Like, they used to try to... Yeah. It's crazy.
So. I would destroy London to that music, no problem. My number one, maybe it's sacrilege to go with somebody so recent, especially when I kind of decided to leave some of the other ones.
You are Team Edward.
I'm going with Robert Pitt. No. I'm actually going with Danny Houston as Marlowe, the leader of the vampires in 30 Days of Night.
Wow.
I fucking loved that portrayal of the vampire. It was so primal. Yeah. I loved the fact that they had their own language, but it was kind of guttural and animalistic. And of course, you know, this comes from the graphic novel, so a lot
Swedish,
of the credit
wasn't
comes
it?
There. Just, it's hard to just tell. Kidding. Yeah, I don't know. It might have been John's accent. It's not that either. But there was just something so primal about they show up, they're predators. They look like humans, they're dressed as humans, they kind of speak to one another, but and sometimes they're on all fours, you know, crawling around, and they just kind of like take over this town, which is not very big. And he leads these vampires, and he's so focused. He's so single-mindedly focused on the blood and murder of these few people that I just really appreciated such a kind of a violent, stripped down to its bare bones portrayal of the vampire when we had seen so many billowy shirts and sexy castle vampires.
Sure, right.
I like this guy. He showed up in Alaska, and he just wanted to fucking eat people.
There's
and
such a thin veneer of humanity over just the contained chaos, and you can see it behind his eyes in every scene that he is on the verge of just losing everything.
Yeah. I really, really
and
dug
I
it.
Think,
so.
I think for my money, 30 Days a Night, I'm trying to think, weigh these different movies, but it's probably my second favorite vampire movie of all time.
Wow.
I mean, I really... I was so blown away by that movie.
After, and I'm a huge after only fan of, Dracula Den Loving It?
Yes, you're right. No, I really do think that that movie just totally blew me away. Absolutely did. So, yeah. And I love the graphic novel, too.
Yeah.
Steve Niles and Ben Templesmith. So, great stuff.
Well, I was thinking of picking Eddie Murphy in Vampire in Brooklyn, but
of course,
just to make me angry.
Yeah. But no, hey. I, you know, my love of the vampire and really does go back to sort of the seminal work on the subject with Bram Stoker's myth. I mean, it is the way I vision vampires to be.
It's Gary Oldman.
Yeah, it's the way I see it. You know, I absolutely adore that story. I love Francis Ford Coppola's take on it. Gary Oldman owns every room he walks into, even when he's trying to be subtle.
Yeah.
You know he's there. Like it's and there's very few moments where he's trying to be
this
subtle.
This was during the drinking binge where like people weren't hiring Gary Oldman too. I think it was like when he was
just
a little off his rocker.
Yeah, he is just over the top and amazing in this movie.
An ancestor, I see a resemblance.
The Order of the Dracul. The dragon. An ancient society pledging my forefathers to defend the church against all enemies of Christ. The relationship was not entirely successful.
Oh, yes.
It is no laughing matter. We, Draculs, have a right to be proud. What devil or witch was ever so great as a killer whose blood flows in these veins? Blood. Is too precious a thing. In these times.
One of the things that I really like, and it would be interesting to see if it does get into to continue that myth, is Bram Stoker's great nephew wrote a sequel to Dracula recently called Dracula the Undead, Dacre Stoker. It's actually very good. It is a very good. It uses Catherine Bathory as the main vampire to get into the whole sense. Mythology
bathing in the blood of
and ties those two characters together. It ties Dracula and Bathory together very well. It's well done. I actually listened to it as an audiobook, and it has a great voice. I got it from Audible, and it just has a great voice. So
if the people over at audible.com are listening, boy could we use a sponsorship.
So I we'll link to that as well in the show notes, but it's just I can't not not go with that. I think Bram Stoker's take on the vampire is my favorite. Oh, as much as I love some of the newer takes like 30 Days a Night, and I don't mind when people veer from those myths. That's not one of the problems I have with Twilight. I don't mind veering from the original works there because it has always evolved. Mm-hmm. But that's just sort of, to me, that's where you start. Hmm. You know.
All right, Jason, why don't you go ahead and close us out?
All right, I'll do that. My number one is Ingrid Pitt as Carmilla, Hammer's The Vampire Lovers, 1970.
Very nice.
If you haven't seen this movie and you're a fan of boobs, like I am, you're really doing yourself
Nobody's
a disservice.
Nobody's a fan of boobs the way that you are.
I always thought the Hammer movies were really stagey and stuffy. I'm not like Larry. I'm not a huge Hammer guy. I don't like a lot of the stuff that they did. But when I saw this movie, it was a friggin' revelation. And it opened up a whole new genre of vamp cinema. You know, lesbian vampire movies,
yeah.
Which I'm a huge fan of.
Really, are you?
So, it's like someone put peanut butter in Jason's chocolate.
You're right about that. Pitt does a great job as a timeless seductress that she craves the affections of these well-to-do women. And she craves their affections as much as the blood that she craves. So it's pretty great. From an eye candy perspective, I think you'd be hard pressed to find something as impressive. So there you go. That's my number one, Ingrid Pitt.
Way to
what,
go.
What, Noah Leah?
Noah Leah, no, Queen of the Damned.
No, Queen of the Damned.
No, that didn't make it in.
I had a couple honorable mentions. I don't know if anyone else had any.
No, but bring them on.
Everything from your lists were pretty much my honorable mentions.
I had Gary Oldman as Dracula, which I think is awesome, but was a little too
obvious.
Yeah. And on that same note, Bela Lugosi and Max Schreck.
Sure.
And Nosferatu and Universal's Dracula. Chris Sarandon as Jerry Dandridge in Fright Night, which I kept almost putting him in as number five, but then didn't, and then put him back. Number five, I almost had a three-way tie between Chris Sarandon, Martin in George Romero's Martin, and Lance Henriksen.
In Near Dark.
Nobody mentioned Near Dark. It's very surprising to me that Near Dark never came out, especially because, and now we can close out this episode this way.
Oh, you're going to beat me.
John, who is a miserable son of a bitch, so that we're clear, once upon a time listed as a bottom five vampire
movie.
Yep. Near Dark.
With Lance Henriksen, and the only time I didn't want to murder Bill Paxton in a film.
Oh, cut it out. Simple Plan.
I'm being over the top here.
Yeah, he's being
he listed as a bottom five Near Dark, and so I have assembled a council of right-minded men to take you out behind the woodshed and beat the shit out of you for that one.
I would say, in John's defense, I don't think Near Dark is anywhere near as good as a lot of people do.
Bottom five?
I don't think it's bottom five.
Bottom five?
No. One thing I want to just get out before you close out this show: no one mentioned Salem's Lot. And no one mentioned Barlow from Salem's Lot, which is modeled after the Nosferatu.
Yeah, Orlok.
And that was another one that almost made my list, but didn't.
That movie, you asked me what my number one movie was. It was Salem's Lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that is my favorite.
But
if you want the truth, I actually left that off my list because I was almost 100% sure.
Somebody else would have.
Yeah. Yours specifically. I thought for sure it would have been yours.
Yeah. But I went the boob route.
couldn't have known. Salem's not a lot of good boobs.
I had a pick that doubles as a top five and a bottom five, and it's the albino hippie vampires from the Omega Man with Charlie.
I love them.
Not zombies,
great that you mention them because I love that fucking movie.
Yeah, sure, love it. Great 70s sci-fi. A horrible adaptation of a great book.
Terrible. Yeah. But it's great in its own cheesy, cheeky sort of weird way. Heston is doing the Heston thing.
He
is just swaggering through the movie and just
Heston as sex symbol, like full on shirt off, like come and get it, ladies.
Yeah, like, just incredible.
Charlton Heston, vampires out there, huh? All right, now we're gonna go do that thing.
Well, that's as great a way to end an episode as we could possibly have with a fully sincere Jason Santo Charlton Heston impression. How else would you close out a discussion of Twilight? Well, thanks very, very much to Jason and Larry for joining us yet again. I think we could probably ask you to go ahead and put down in your Trapper Keepers an appointment for next year, because we will be back doing another roundtable discussion. I'm not sure of what yet, but we have a year to figure it out. Of course, our listeners, if there's a movie you think is primed for a roundtable discussion of great length and stupidity. Boy, are we your guys. So, Larry and Jason, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Yep, thanks for having us. Хочу знов скакати, вєш бачу сати
і сати. Карати, карати, я хочу так задній вікяї. Застаний зад. I was just listening to on, I believe it was the Film Jitsu podcast. Fuck.
He was listening to his own podcast.
You guys made some great points.
Those guys are genius.
These guys are awesome.
That one fat guy's an asshole.
Yeah, Carmichael.
Oh.
He's sensitive. Don't say things like that about him. They can tell in my voice. My voice sounds fat.